And we're back. It's This Week in Science. We are on the phone with Justin Wolfers, PhD, Assistant Professor of Business and Public Policy at the Wharton School, University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. Wow. He does all sorts of economic research, including political economy, the economics of family, social policy, law, and economics and behavioral economics. Today, we're going to talk with him a bit about prediction markets. And without further ado...
Justin?
Yeah.
Justin.
Hey. Happy to talk.
It's nice to have you on the show today.
And I'm glad I'm not the only confused Justin.
Yeah, no, that there's usually a confused Justin around here.
At least one.
At least one. So I'm really interested in talking with you today about this field of prediction markets. As an economist, what makes prediction markets so interesting?
So one part of prediction markets is really literally right at the heart of economics. So what is a prediction market? It's some market where we bet or trade on some outcome. So we might buy a stock that pays $100 if, say, Hillary becomes president. If people are willing to pay $35 for that, you might think that there's a 35% chance that Hillary becomes president. So there's two things that I've already said that are in the heart of economics. One is it's a market, and, markets are what economists study. And the second is, it's a market that gives us a prediction or a forecast. And predicting things or forecasting the future is another thing that's right at the heart of economics.
But usually with economics, it's not so much predicting events in, the things that people are going to do. Maybe you want to predict stock market crashes, or you want to predict some particular stock going up. But
Kirsten. I think it's absolutely...
Oh, no. It's a very, very naive view, isn't it?
not at all. This is the dinner party trap that economists get. You know, the worst thing in the world is to be a doctor at a dinner party because someone will take off their shoes and show you their warts.
Yeah, great.
The second worst thing is to be an economist because someone will ask you what's going to happen to the stock market.
Right.
And it's a very, very small part of what economics is about. So I think economics, broadly defined, is a social science. And increasingly, economists come to identify the field as being a methodology rather than a subfield or a specific domains of behavior. So the great Alfred Marshall defined economics as man in the business of everyday life. And so, some of us watch the stock market, but also, of course, Ben Bernanke has to forecast what's going to happen to employment and unemployment.
Right.
But equally, fields much more diverse. Who's going to win the election is a question that increasingly economists are starting to ask as well. And it goes a long way beyond this. The success of a book like Freakonomics attests to the growing reach of economics. And so there's a lot of things that we might want to know about the world as social scientists. Forget the word economics. And potentially markets can help us learn some things about the world.
So what sort of things are people currently looking at in these prediction markets? What are some examples of things we'd like to predict?
Sure. So I guess the first thing is there's the corporate applications. And so you're actually seeing firms now starting to adopt prediction markets for things that firms care about. I'll be far too glib and say, firms need to know how many widgets they're going to sell in order to know how many raw materials to order and how many people to hire and things like that. And so we're starting to see firms adopting them for the things that firms need to forecast. Now, firms need to forecast lots of things, by the way. They also need to forecast what laws will change, how financial conditions will change, and so on, whether consumers will like red shirts or blue shirts next year. And so that's what's happening on the firm side. I think on the public policy side, for instance, there's markets where you can predict the future path of the federal funds rate that's controlled by Ben Bernanke. And there's markets that allow you to predict the future of inflation. And given that one of the things Ben Bernanke cares a lot about is what are people's inflation expectations, that's something that the Fed tracks very closely. And then there's stuff that's just plain interesting, and potentially interesting for political scientists in particular. So right now, of course, you can bet on whether Hillary will become president. But more than that, you can bet on whether Scooter Libby will be pardoned before the end of this term. The questions that can be asked here are really limited more by our imagination. And being an economist, I don't have much. but also, you know, people are betting on, you know, which movies will be successful, things like that.
Who's going to win the Oscars this year?
Exactly. Yeah. Will the Red Sox win the World Series?
Yeah, well, people have been doing, the sports betting is something that people have been doing for years and years and years. Which boxer is going to win? Which horse is going to win the race? These are things that people have been putting money down on for a long time. But are these new betting markets, like whether or not Hillary's going to win, are these something new, or is this something that's been going on that's just recently been picked up on by economists?
So I actually, you can probably tell from my accent, I'm an Australian. So Australians are degenerate gamblers. And I grew up actually on the Australian race course working for various bookmakers. And so the idea that markets aggregate lots of information is something that's incredibly obvious when you're on a racetrack.
Mm-hmm.
You'll literally see the trainer of a horse go and bet that his horse will win. And you'll see the cousin of a jockey go and bet on a different horse, not his cousin's horse. And you'll see people walking with pages of computer printouts from their sophisticated models go and bet on another horse. And so it's immediately
always bet on the inside track after it rains.
All these different angles. So you have different people, different pieces of wisdom that they all have, and they're all betting in the market. And the odds get adjusted. And so immediately, having lived through that sort of very vivid demonstration of what it is a market does, it becomes quite obvious that what markets are doing is aggregating all these different perspectives or pieces of information. And so on the sports betting side, you're right to say sports betting's been going on for generations. All that's going on that's different in the prediction markets is rather than at the end of the day saying which horse won, we say, well, what were the odds? Or alternatively, what was the prediction market price? Because that's a forecast. We might think that forecast is useful.
So then actually what the market predictions are is more of a survey of confidence,
sure,
than anything else. I mean, like, if a lot of people think Hillary's going to win or this horse is going to win, then it shows that particular horse in a race, not to try to call the potential next president of the United States a horse, but
some of them are.
But it shows
some of them look that way.
It really shows a confidence. So then, when you have analysts looking at like a new company takeover, are they looking as much at the portfolio and the history of that company as the confidence that people have in the new CEO? Or
yeah, I think that's absolutely right. So you can in fact think about the stock market as being itself a prediction market.
Sort of a confidence game.
Absolutely. And so, the stock market, what are you buying when you're buying a stock? You actually, all you're doing is buying the right to keep the dividend checks that get sent out each year. And so you can think about the stock market as being literally the net a prediction market on the net present value of future earnings from that company.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problem with the stock market is if I tell you that Microsoft's price is, I don't know, 51 or 510, whatever it is, that doesn't give you a very clear prediction. Like, I don't know what that means. But if I tell you that Hillary has a 35% chance to become the next president, that's now a prediction you can really work with.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I tell you there's a 20% chance of a recession this year, it's something you can now factor into what you're doing elsewhere. So I sort of want to return to Kirsten's question, which is this new or old? It actually turns out, so this all sounds very exciting and, you know, high-tech finance and derivatives and Web 2.0 and all these things that seem kind of sexy. It turns out, of course, it's much older than that. Americans have been betting on presidential elections all the way back to the time of Lincoln, literally.
Nice.
If you go back and read the New York Times coverage of the 1916 presidential race, you will not see a single mention of polls. There's a very simple reason. Polls hadn't been invented. But what you will find is literally on the front page of the New York Times reports on the latest odds or prediction market prices of the major candidates and who placed what bets and how big those bets were.
Hmm.
So this is really a very, very old technology, and as you say, it's about aggregating people's different opinions. Now, it's different from a survey in one important respect. You can call me and survey me and say, do you think Hillary's going to be the next president? And I'll either say yes or no, and I'll say that either if I'm very confident or not very confident. Whereas in a market, if I'm really confident, I'll bet a lot of money.
Yeah.
And if I'm not confident, I won't bet much at all. And so what it allows me to do is weight the intensity of my beliefs.
Right. So it's not absolute. It's not a binary decision. It's actually much more continuous.
Absolutely. And so that's one of the ways in which we think that markets, one of the reasons we think markets might do a better job than surveys. Now, another reason is think of another kind of survey. I was in a meeting a few weeks ago, and our boss had a particular idea. And he said, who thinks this is a good idea? And he ran a survey. And not surprisingly, everyone said yes.
Especially if
the intern,
raise your hand while the boss is looking at you and the boss is counting.
If the intern had suggested, made the suggestions in the survey, without the boss in the room, the results could have been completely different.
Absolutely. Now, what if instead we just ran a betting market? Because it's absolutely free for me to agree with the boss.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Didn't cost me anything. But if he said, who wants to bet that I'm right? You know what? I'm not willing to bet $100 and lose $100 just to brown nose to the boss.
Right.
And so one of the things that a market does is it provides a very strong incentive to tell the truth as well. And so whenever you ask, now let's go to a real-world context. You could call a Republican operative right now and say, who do you think is going to win the 2008 election? They'll say, the Republican will, of course. And do the same with Democrat, and they'll say, a Democrat will, of course.
Right.
They don't actually believe it. But a survey has no way of forcing you to tell the truth. Hmm. Ask them to put their money where their mouth is, and I bet you might get some somewhat different answers.
So how do real world applications actually compare against polls and surveys? Is the accuracy of the market much higher?
Yeah. So this, you ask exactly the right question, which is not do markets work, it's do they work better than the other thing that we're using. And so to give you an example, I have some research where there's a market where people bet or trade on what the future value of employment growth will be in the U.S. And there's two ways of figuring out what the future of employment is going to be. One is call 30 leading economists on Wall Street and ask them what their forecast is and maybe take an average. So it's like a survey, which Justin was referring to earlier.
Mm-hmm.
The other is put them in a room and let them bet or let them trade. Mm. And so it turns out that in this case, putting them in a room and letting them trade gives you more accurate forecasts than taking the average of these guys. And so that's one domain, but we obviously have a bunch of other head-to-head competitions in things like that. For instance, do polls do a better job of forecasting elections than markets? No, the markets do better. Do experts do a better job of predicting who will win the Oscar than the market? No, the market does better. And so over and over, we see the market is doing somewhat better here.
Now, are there markets that are open, like online, that people can just go, that people could go to and bet either play money or real money?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the most fun markets is the Hollywood Stock Exchange, where you get to trade on which movies or which actors you think are going to be successful.
I've done that. That rocks.
Another one that's really interesting, because they have a wide variety of things like French elections and things like that, is news futures, and that's also play money. And the one that's up on my screen right now is a website called InTrade. And it's really interesting because they have a bunch of, I think, quite intriguing contracts. Like, I can tell you right now, the market thinks it's a 62% chance that Scooter Libby will be pardoned before George Bush leaves office. They've got, markets on American Idol, on, which disc format is going to win, Blu-ray or HD DVD. And what's going to happen with North Korea, Iran, the Middle East? Is Wolfowitz going to be forced to resign from the World Bank? So these are interesting things. These are conversations a lot of us have around the water cooler.
Right.
And you can now be the smartest person in the water cooler, around the water cooler, not by reading the Wall Street Journal to learn about these things, but actually just go to a website and live off the wisdom of crowds rather than the wisdom of a couple of experts.
Now, the wisdom of crowds, you have, I just want to jump off of this for a second. Say I don't know anything about, some political situation, but I go to InTrade and I say, I'm going to bet on that. And I put a dollar down and I don't know one answer from another. But how is that going to affect if I have no knowledge, but I'm putting money someplace anyway?
That's a really good question. So lots of people have this idea that the most important thing in a market is to keep the idiots out. Because idiots, of course, just add stupidity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's intuitive. If you were going to do a survey, as Justin suggested, then I think that's the right thing to do. Now, in a market, one of the hardest things, actually, in practice, is getting people to trade within that market. So, for instance, I could say to you right now, this is a radio interview. Do you want to bet me whether I'm wearing a blue shirt today? And I'm going to give you even money odds on that. And by the way, men don't often wear blue shirts, maybe only 10% of the time, but I'm willing to give you a 50-50 bet. Are you willing to have that bet with me, Kirsten?
Sure.
No, you're not. Because you know that I know the answer.
You know the answer. I don't.
Right. So you would be a fool to accept that bet. But mm-hmm. I am wearing a blue shirt. And so you now owe me $100.
wait a minute.
But so you shouldn't want to bet against me if you're worried I know more than you. Well, this situation, this goes in a whole lot more things. So do you want to bet against me on whether Hillary will be president? Well,
that's something neither of us should know.
So maybe you're willing to, but it turns out, of course, you know, I might have had lunch yesterday with a friend from the political science department or a friend who's working on the campaign. The very fact that I'm willing to bet on the on this issue tells you that I think I know something that you don't know. In which case, anyone who ever wants to bet against you is effectively saying, Kirsten, I know something you don't. In which case, you should be unwilling to bet against them. Or, when you tell me you're willing to bet against me on something,
you should be unwilling to bet against me.
Right.
Right.
And so, what's the best way out of this problem? What if I told, what if the person who offered you a bet on the color of my shirt wasn't me, but was a random caller to your show? Just some complete moron. Well, now you should be really willing to bet against
sucker money.
Did I say moron and then you just chimed in, Justin?
You know, no, it's just when you say the market hates the idiot, I always thought they loved them because they add sucker money to the whole thing.
Exactly. So this is now all of a sudden, if it's just, if Justin, if it's you who's willing to bet on the color of my shirt against Kirsten, she'll be very willing to bet with you on that.
Yeah.
Because
she thinks that you're a fool.
Well, you know.
I don't know what you're trying to say here.
The important thing is to get a market to work, to get someone to trade, you actually have to have enough fools there.
Yeah.
And so fools are sort of the honey that draws the bees.
And I probably am one of those fools, because when I invest, I actually don't look at anything other than this is a company I would like to see do well. This is a company who's like...
Sounds like me betting on baseball. I always bet the Red Sox.
Totally. You pick the teams. You pick the teams you like.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what I do when I invest, which isn't like I'm not getting rich off it, but,
right,
you know.
But it's guys like you and me who then make it profitable for someone like Warren Buffett to employ thousands of analysts to try and figure out which are the right companies.
Oh. So we're actually the driving force behind the market, not the people who – they're looking to us to see what we like.
They're looking to us to make money.
Right.
But in doing that, what they do is they reveal to the market their information.
Right.
And that's sort of the magic. So it's really not that you want to keep the stupid guys out. In fact, the stupid guys are the ones who provide the subsidies that make it important, that make it the smart guys want to bet in the market.
Wasn't it Rockefeller who pulled all his money out before the big stock market crash in the 20s there? Because he got a stock tip from his shoeshine boy and then figured there's nobody left. If Shoeshine Boy is invested in the market, there's nobody left to get money from?
My memory is that was Joe Kennedy.
Joe Kennedy, okay.
It may have been Rockefeller, but
I have no memory.
I'm blonde, so I'm even worse.
So
Joe Kennedy was still running moonshine, wasn't he?
At the time, absolutely.
Okay, he wasn't in the cell. He had all his money in mattresses.
He said, it's time to get out. So it's the fools, the fool's money, the sucker money that draws people in, the people who actually have the knowledge, who are and actually have more money, the largest sums of money to throw in and bet in the markets. What are some really interesting examples of stuff like this?
Continuing on this line, some of the markets that haven't worked because people are worried that someone else has more information than they do.
Mm-hmm.
There were markets, for instance, on who was going to be the next Supreme Court justice. Now, I really wouldn't want to bet because I'm worried the guy on the other side of that bet works at the Justice Department or the AG's office or the White House and actually knows the answer. And so that's an example where a market didn't work. Now, this is actually really interesting because it turns out, and for companies it's an important issue because no one wants to bet if they think that the VP of sales is going to be on the other side and he really knows more than you know. Mm. Now, the best way to get people to trade, though, is to create stupidity. And fortunately, the one thing that's not in short supply in this world is stupidity. And so one of the things I advise companies to do when they set up prediction markets is literally set up a computer program that bets like an imbecile. Because if it's betting like an imbecile, then what it's going to do is create profit opportunities for the rest of us, and then you might feel more willing to bet on what color my shirt is. So these are problems that are all easily solved, although it does require you to be willing to lose some money to learn something. And so it's not that there's something for nothing here, necessarily. Sometimes there is. But oftentimes it's, you know, you pay a little bit and you can get a lot of trade going, and that trade reveals a heck of a lot of information.
So you've done some analysis of past elections, and specifically like the 2004 presidential election, I believe, was one of them. How accurately did the markets you looked at predict that how George Bush would win, or did they predict that?
Incredibly accurately, and in some sense, this is going to sound weird, almost too accurately. So in the 2004 race, you could actually bet not just on whether Bush would win the election, but you could actually bet on whether he'd win each state. With the Electoral College system, of course, that's a very important issue. And in all 50 states, if the in-trade data said it was more likely that the Republicans would win that state, then he won. And if they said it's more likely that he would lose that state, then he lost. So that's an incredible record to get 50 out of 50 right.
What was Florida?
You're testing me here.
Well, because that's the...
It was around about 55 or 60%.
Okay.
Actually, it was about 60%, actually. And, of course, Bush won Florida.
Yeah.
Now, there's a sense in which that's doing too well, which is that, you know, if a market says something's a 60% chance to occur, that doesn't mean it should always occur. It means it should occur 6 times out of 10.
Yeah.
In fact, in this case, the favorite won 50 times out of 50. Which is a little bit too often. And so maybe that's actually suggesting that the market is not confident enough in its own beliefs, in some sense. And so that's what economists would call a favorite long shot bias, that you could actually win money by always betting on the favorite. And that would have won you a lot of money in the 2004 race from doing that.
Right.
This makes me so nervous. It really does. Because, like, one of the things that I always appreciated about, like, my 6 o'clock news 5-minute weatherman is that he's the only one in the whole news broadcast that's predicting the future. Yep. Everybody else, even the sports guys, don't try to guess who's going to win tomorrow's game, right?
Yep.
They just talk about who the players are. The news guys talk about stuff that's already happened the day before and was probably written by somebody else, and they just blurb it out. The weather guy goes up there, makes a prediction for the next day, the next week. He doesn't tell you what last week's weather was. He makes the prediction for the future. If his predictions were based on what people wanted to do for the weekend or what they thought, well, you know, my left toe hurts and therefore... That makes me incredibly nervous about our entire financial infrastructure. I'm now terrified, except that, I guess from what you're telling me, if everybody wants it to be sunny for the weekend, it actually would be.
No, I'm not telling you that at all. I am telling you that when it comes to... I can tell you what I want the weather to be.
Mm-hmm.
When I trade in a market, though, I don't trade on what I want. I trade on what I think is going to happen.
Right.
And actually, it turns out to be that markets do a better job in predicting the weather than weathermen do.
Oh. You're going to make some weathermen very unhappy.
And it's certainly the evidence on pollsters not doing as good a job on markets makes a lot of pollsters very unhappy. they potentially have a job. But this is what's beautiful here, Justin. It's incredibly easy to become an expert in anything. So what's going on with the markets is it's what economists call the efficient markets hypothesis. And this is the view that people will trade in markets until all opportunities to make money have been exhausted.
Right.
If they do that, then the prediction market price reflects all of the available information that's out there. So now let's think about making you an expert on the economy. Well, one thing you could do is you could come to Wharton and get an MBA, and you could read the Wall Street Journal every day, and you could read a lot of textbooks. You'd find it, you know, a lot of work, and one day you'd get there. Or simply run a prediction market on whether we'll have a recession next year. If the efficient markets hypothesis is true, then that prediction market includes all the available information, including anything you could possibly have learned in business school. Simply by looking up the prediction market price on the likelihood of a recession, you've now become at least as much of an expert as anyone and probably as much of an expert as everyone on the economy. So I used to have a boss in Australia who understood this really well. She really wanted to participate in the water cooler conversations, which were all about sports, but she really didn't want to become a sports expert because, you know, you have to watch games and they can be boring. So I used to just print out for her on a Thursday afternoon the bookmaker's odds.
There you go.
A prediction market price.
Nice.
Once she knows that, that's the single best predictor of football outcomes.
Right. So then she could get into those conversations and be able to bet along
Still,
with everyone else.
Still, the danger here is a guy like Rupert Murdoch who can own a cable news station that has financial experts on every day and then tries to buy the Wall Street Journal and then influence. when you get people influencing then opinion of what is good and what is bad in the financial markets outside of anything else, don't they have like a pretty much free hand to dictate what happens?
There could be two things that you're saying here. So one is you could say, well, Murdoch is so charming that everyone's going to just go along with whatever the heck he says. And that's completely wrong, and that's actually exactly the thing that's useful about markets. If you find, based on reasonable evidence, that a particular CEO is an imbecile, then you don't have to go and shout that from the rooftops. You'll just sell the stock. And if other people figure this out, they'll sell the stock. Mm-hmm. And the stock price... and because it's a loser's game to hold on to the stock price, to hold on to the stock, even if the guy's an imbecile. And so you will speak through your actions. You'll put your money where your mouth is, and so the market price will reflect the market's assessment of the ability of a particular CEO. And so that's the sense in which, again, I think one thing that markets do, by forcing you to put your money where your mouth is, they're a wonderful truth-telling device. Now, there's a second thing you could be saying. What if Rupert Murdoch decided tomorrow that he hated Hillary Clinton and he went to Intrade and he sold...
Decided tomorrow?
But what if he decided to do something about it and he decided to go to Intrade and sell as much Hillary Clinton stock as he could, driving the price down? Well, first of all, it's not clear that would affect the election, but it might. Like, everyone might say, well, the odds say that Hillary's not going to win, therefore we're not going to vote for her. There's been a few attempts, actually, of people trying to manipulate political prediction markets. And usually what happens is someone throws tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars at a market, and then they manage to change the market price for a couple of hours. But the thing is, they're trying to change the market price away from what its fundamental value is, which means that there's a potential profit opportunity if this person's buying for you to sell.
Right.
And so if Rupert Murdoch were to try and say, I'm going to drive down the price of the Hillary Clinton security to five, you know,
yeah,
having
a
5% chance of winning the election, by jingo, I know what I'd do.
Yeah.
I'd buy like crazy. Huh.
Right. Because it's at a low price, you have that opportunity.
Yeah.
Make
and
some
so
money.
This offsets the attempts at market manipulation. So the possibility of these guys manipulating markets, I think, is one to be taken seriously. But the evidence so far suggests that markets have this wonderful built-in self-correcting mechanism, and attempts to manipulate them haven't been very successful so far. Now, they might turn out to be more successful in the future as people learn how to manipulate them better. I don't know.
Justin, unfortunately, we are out of time. We have Kid Courageous and Tiger Lily, and I think they're almost in tears because we're totally going overtime today.
I have one quick question. You're watching the markets. You're on top of these things. Who's the big bet for the 2008 election at this point?
So at this stage, Hillary looks like the most likely of all of the candidates, and the Democrats look more likely than the Republicans.
I'm buying Obama stock all the way.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us this morning. It's been really interesting to talk with you about this topic. I think there are going to be a few people out there heading towards those websites that you mentioned.
Yeah.
And I wish you all the best and have a wonderful day.
Great. You too. Thanks. Thank you. It's been fun.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
And that does it for This Week in Science. Remember, if you learned anything from today's show,
it's all in your head.
Give me the scientist, always stuck on, always trying.